You are listening to Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. Here at the Thunderbolt, I tend to cover a lot of controversial topics from controversial points of view, and therefore some of the other folks that work with this radio station always appreciate it when I point out that while they may agree with the views expressed on this program, they also very well may not. And in either case, they are in no way responsible for that content. Therefore, if my show makes you want to start hurling blunt objects at people, then make sure you choose the correct target, which in this case would be me, not them. And now, on with the show!
The Thunderbolt. Faster than a speeding bullet point. More powerful than multi-gigabyte bandwidth. Able to leap mixed metaphors in a single bound. Defending truth, justice, and the un-American way. Boldly going where no hack radio show has ever gone before. The Thunderbolt airs every Saturday at noon right here on Free Radio Olympia. Listen at your own risk. Hello, lassies and laddies, and other variously sexed folk. This week, we celebrate humanity's pirate heritage by honoring some of the most successful pirates in our history. And here at the Thunderbolt, we be doing that by eventually presenting an award for the most evil person in history. Well, contain your excitement, me hearties, for this week we will be revealing nomination number 3 for the official Thunderbolt Most Evil Person in History Award. So prepare yourselves, because here we go. As you may or may not remember, the previous nominees for the Thunderbolt's Most Evil Persons in History Award were Edward Bernays and the brothers Alan
on horseback
and John Foster Dulles. Now these,
I'd rather be here,
were very powerful people who were personally responsible for many of the worst things in our world today. Now, I featured those particular people because they individually brought about such an incredible amount of such complete and utterly unbelievable suckiness, yet virtually no one has ever heard of Edward Bernays, nor have they ever heard of either of the Dulles brothers. However, the fact is that as powerful as these men were, they were always acting in the interests of others. Yes, they were of the 1%. However, they were not members of what I usually call the 0.1%, but who actually represent something like the 0.00001%. Since there are actually only a few thousand people who do decide pretty much everything major that happens in our world these days. This week's nomination is a different matter, for this is an entire family that both individually, but especially collectively, represents the true dragon. Allow me to introduce you to the Rockefellers. Now, there may be exceptions, but as far as I can tell, this nomination includes every Rockefeller that has lived for the last 150 years. Yet another in the plethora of ironic facts that exist in our modern world is that almost everyone in this modern world, except the American public, knows that the Council on Foreign Relations is the body that actually determines American foreign policy. Now, I once heard an ex-French intelligence agent say that this fact was the very first thing that they told him when he had been assigned to the American desk. Now, I have spoken of this numerous times in past Thunderbolts. The Council on Foreign Relations is, and has been since shortly after World War II, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Rockefeller family. Now, CFR member Henry Kissinger was the right hand of Richard Nixon and possibly the most heinous war criminal of the 20th century. And that is saying something. Henry Kissinger is also yet another potential nominee for the Thunderbolts Most Evil Persons in History Award. Now, Mr. Kissinger is, and has always been, the equivalent of a capo for the Rockefeller family. Yes, when Chase Bank needed its mining interests in Chile protected from a popular and freely elected socialist named Salvador Allende, it was Henry Kissinger that organized the military coup that overthrew Allende. But it was David Rockefeller who set up the original meeting between Kissinger and the owners of the Chilean mines. When Richard Nixon later left the White House in disgrace, Kissinger did not. 30 years later, George W. Bush was treating Henry Kissinger like a member of the family. And Dick Cheney has since revealed that he talked to Henry Kissinger more than anyone else during his tenure as vice president. Hillary Clinton reveled in praise from Kissinger during her presidential campaign. And also in 2016, just after being defeated by Barack Obama, Kissinger met with candidate Rump so that he could relay to him what U.S. foreign policy would be under his administration should he win. Bernays, the Dulles brothers, Henry Kissinger, as powerful and as influential as all of these men were, and even with all of the very serious shite that these men dumped all over the rest of the world, even with all that, the fact remains that all of these men were mere lackeys. And as for the real bosses, i.e. the people who actually give the orders, well, if you want to know who they are, you can find many of them documented, along with many of their connections with each other, as well as their connections with many of the various financial, business, and industrial institutions that they share at theyrule.net. The Rockefellers, on the other hand, pretty much created the modern iteration of the 0.0001% and their progeny are all still there. So the Rockefeller Foundation recently announced that they are divesting from oil. And that is so ironic on so many levels that I can't really do anything but shake my head and say wow. For most of the 20th century, when one considered oil, the first thing usually one thought of was John D. Rockefeller. However, while John D. Rockefeller was indeed the king of oil, and while oil did indeed lubricate Mr. Rockefeller's rise to power, even before his death, oil had already become a very small part of the many and various parts of our entire frigging world that were completely dominated by John D. Rockefeller and his ilk. Along with a small handful of other elites, such as Morgans and Vanderbilts, Chases and Rockefellers, Childs, John D. Rockefeller built the modern machine. And that machine now completely dominates our government, our economy, our military, our media, our schools, our food, our energy, our thoughts, our desires, our dreams, and our asses. Oil was never their ultimate thing. Oil was merely a means to an end. Power was the thing. And by the end of the 20th century, their new world order was firmly established. Transportation, industrial power, plastic manufacturing, pharmaceuticals. The Rockefellers have arranged our reality so that there is no facet of modern life that is not one way or another, utterly dependent upon them and upon their oil. So when it comes to doing things like making trains run on time, having a central machine running everything is probably the most efficient method. But the problem with Mr. Rockefeller's machine is that it was built in his own psychopathic image. The problem with Mr. Rockefeller's machine is that it wants to eliminate all dissent. The problem with Mr. Rockefeller's machine is that it wants to kill billions of people. The problem with Mr. Rockefeller's machine is that it wants to decide who breeds and who does not. The problem with Mr. Rockefeller's machine is that it wants to completely eliminate all privacy, i.e., they want to record all of your phone calls and keep track of everywhere you go and list everyone that you associate with, and so on and so forth. And this complete elimination of privacy is only part of a much larger strategy to completely control everything else in the whole frigging world. Everything. The problem with Mr. Rockefeller's machine is that it wants to control what you learn in school, and it wants to control everything you read in the media. It wants to control what you buy, what you eat, what you feel, and it wants to completely control what you think. At a eulogy for David Rockefeller, the last surviving grandson of John D., ex-President George H.W. Bush had this to say. So many knew him as one of the most generous philanthropists and brightest points of light, whose caring and commitment to the widest range of worthy causes touched and lifted innumerable lives. David was also very active in national and international affairs, and his connections and keen aptitude for issues made him a valuable advisor to presidents of both parties. Yours truly, certainly included. Yeah, right. Amongst a truly dizzying array of banks, think tanks, universities, corporations, and foundations, the head Rockefeller thumbs thoroughly embedded into their nasty little pies, David Rockefeller was also chairman and CEO of Chase Manhattan, the chair of the Council on Foreign Relations, the founder of the Trilateral Commission, and a founding member of the Bilderberger Group. As far as the 20th century was concerned, the Rockefeller family was the most powerful single entity on the planet for most of the period. by the 1950s. They were at the center of the business world, the conservation world, the environmental movement, and of course, the political world. Now, David Rockefeller never ran for president, though, because that actually would have represented a demotion. According to journalist Joe Persico, over the years, through the Rockefeller philanthropic enterprises, charities, support of science, their business enterprises, a web had developed which spread out and was interconnected with practically every center of power, both in our country and abroad as well. This was the real strength and power of the family, and it went well beyond money alone. End quote. In the interest of forming their one world government that would be dominated by Rockefellers, of course, John D. Rockefeller III donated the site of the UN building in New York to help assure the UN's success and credibility. And meanwhile, Brother David was very busy over at Chase Bank. David Rockefeller said of his time at Chase, "Little by little, over a period of about 30 years, we opened branches and offices in about 50 countries all around the world. And we're represented in other ways, in many more than that. I quite frequently would go over to the countries that I thought we should be in and meet with the leaders of the country as well as the business leaders. And this, of course, is essentially the way that I happen to know as many people as I do all around the world, and I feel that was certainly the one of the best things that I did for the bank." End quote. Concerning David Rockefeller, it is impossible to separate the business interests of Chase from his own business interests, or that of his personal network of family and friends, or from his evil plots of world domination, for that matter. And so, as with so much else in Rockefeller world, both these business and personal interests converged at the globalist ideology that motivated the entire family throughout their various careers throughout the endless decades. And meanwhile, David Rockefeller was also injecting himself into the very heart of world geopolitics. He was literally manipulating the banking and business interests of his family in order to dominate the entire globe. And along the way, David Rockefeller befriended many of the most notorious and murderous dictators and despots on the planet. David Rockefeller had the personal phone numbers and personal relationships with such luminaries as the Shah of Iran and Saddam Hussein, amongst many, many others. And of course, there is also the unimaginable resources of the overlapping family philanthropic organizations upon whose boards he sat and whose resources he could direct to benefit his own agenda. The Rockefeller Brothers Fund, the Rockefeller Family Fund, the Rockefeller University, on and on and on. In further addition to all of that, there are literally a host of similar such bodies all over the world that are also connected to all of these other Rockefeller interests that they controlled indirectly, but controlled nonetheless. And then there are the secret groups. Groups that Rockefeller helped the founder direct, and groups that boast members from the highest reaches of business, finance, government, and even royalty. Groups that are so secretive, their very existence was denied for decades. The Bilderberger Group, the Trilateral Commission, the CFR itself are all amongst these. The Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission are now universally known, but this was not the case for many years, and people like me that were trying to expose them during that period were dismissed as conspiracy nuts. And part two of the official Thunderbolt's Most Evil Persons in History Award, nomination number 3, will continue in just a moment. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt! And welcome to part two of the official Thunderbolt Most Evil Persons in History Award, nomination number 3. In part one, I described the means that the Rockefeller family has used to control the American government in general and the economic engines of the entire world in particular. I also listed numerous and very compelling reasons for why this is a very bad thing. However, all of the financial and political information that I discussed in part one is public information, and it is well known to people like me who research such things. There is another, in many ways even scarier, aspect to the Rockefeller machine, though, that most people are completely unaware of. Yes, kids, yet another major focus of the Rockefeller machine could easily be labeled as Eugenics Are Us. Yes, to my mind, the very scariest aspect of the Rockefeller legacy remains largely in shadows, and that legacy consists of their highly enthusiastic and generous promotion, advocacy, and financing of the eugenics movement during the first half of the 20th century. Since American history books and school classes almost completely ignore it these days, most Americans do not even know what eugenics means, much less possess any knowledge about the fact that the eugenics movement was a major thing that swept the entire United States. Eugenics was, in fact, literally a mania. And in addition, during its heyday, this enthusiasm for eugenic philosophy was used to deprive tens of thousands of people of their most basic fundamental human rights. For instance, tens of thousands of American citizens were deprived of the right to procreate. And they sought to deprive many others of much more than that. The entire philosophy of eugenics was based upon nothing more than the assertion that the poor and destitute did not deserve to pass on their genes. These people thought that the state should be able to decide who should get to live or who should die. But since they knew that would be politically impossible to actually accomplish, then they settled for laws that allowed the state to use forced sterilizations in literally deciding who could breed and who could not breed. This philosophy also, ipso facto, meant that the elites were the elite because they were genetically superior. And that meant that they had full moral justification to control everything and everyone. Sounds kind of like a repackaging of the divine right of kings, eh? So obsessed with breeding and with family heredity, the eugenicists believed that it was not merely physical characteristics that were determined by one's family line, but social characteristics as well, such as intelligence, or conscientiousness, or even criminality. If you are poor, it is because you came from poor stock. And if you're a criminal, it is because your family line is criminal. And if you're a Rockefeller, or a Rothschild, then you are rich and successful because your family was destined for fortune and success. What a convenient philosophy for the elites to promote. So the entire field of eugenics was eventually exposed as pure pseudo-scientific charlatanry. But that was a horse that they rode hard for a long time. Yes, fueled by very generous support from America's rich and powerful, the field of eugenics was transformed from the quaint hobby horse of a few mad scientists into the social cause of an entire generation. And by the 1920s, everyone who was anyone was extolling the need to eradicate the, quote, germplasm, unquote, of the, quote, lower stocks, unquote. George Bernard Shaw, John Maynard Keynes, Alexander Graham Bell, and Oliver Wendell Holmes were amongst the many proponents of sterilizing what they called idiots, imbeciles, and morons. And as to the criteria they used, these people almost certainly would have wanted to sterilize Stephen Hawking. And the popularity of eugenics only waned when Adolf Hitler extended eugenics to its logical conclusion. And here is what is even less known. The Rockefeller family used many of their myriad foundations and institutions to become the central drivers of this movement. And they have been the central drivers in efforts to reduce world population ever since. And just because Hitler had given them a bad name, the Rockefeller gang was not about to give up on their holy quest. They would simply need to package it under a different name. After World War II, the adherents of eugenics sought a more publicly acceptable rebranding of their ideas, and thus JD3 founded the Population Council. And as people immediately thereafter moved the American Eugenics Society, lock, stock, and barrel, directly into the offices of the newly formed Population Council. So in my newsletter, I recently attributed a quote about useless mouths to Henry Kissinger. And when a reader called me on it, I could not back it up. I had to admit that while I had been using that quote for my entire adult life, when called upon, I was unable to directly attribute this quote to Mr. Kissinger. Well, I can now document quotes about useless eaters to John D. Rockefeller III in his efforts to rebrand eugenics in other packages, such as the often stated concerns about overpopulation. And now this takes us full circle, because one gentleman who greatly assisted in the promotion of the eugenics movement was Henry Kissinger. Yes, the Kisser himself was commissioned to do a top secret study called NSSM 200, which was completed in 1974. But was not made public until it was finally declassified in the 1990s. It was then learned that as a result of this study, it had become official U.S. government policy under Gerald Ford to impose population reduction on what Kissinger called developing countries that have rapid population growth. Kissinger argued that rapid population growth would create populations that would start demanding a fair share of the pie. And Kissinger warned that these developing countries would soon begin demanding a standard of living that would include things like adequate food, shelter, and health care. Eugenic blasphemy! And there is one final piece of evidence that I will here present to close my argument. That evidence being a quote from Devil David Rockefeller himself. Some believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States. They characterize my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will. Well, if that is the charge, I stand guilty, and I am proud of it. And there it is, kids. Straight from the dragon's mouth into your radio. It's time to get to work now.
But first, we'll get you warmed up with a few tunes. This is a band out of France that I really like called Caravan Palace.
Get into what they call a jumping mood. You know what I mean by jumping mood? Well, we just can't miss. Ladies and gentlemen,
we'll be right back. and lamb, a candy and jam and ice cream.
I gotta hit that string, you better watch it. With a cat that I pack with a full clip. I got the whip, got the pigeon that I keep undercover. All up in the cup, just to live it up. See this stone cold face, try to knock it. I give it that never walk, I'm a rocket. I got a beat in it, I got a frip in it. I got a beat, got a beat, got a beat, a beat, a beat.
Put down your brick, you're ready. It's hot. top where things get messy. Keep booty shaking, you know your head has no right to say no. Tonight it's ready, set, go. Baby, can you move around the rhythm? Switch hands, get with and jump and roll. Get us a rock and roll round. Let's down, down, body, body, coming with a super hottie. Let's go, 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 hell no. Baby, can you move around the rhythm? Cause you know we're living in the fast lane. Speed up, it ain't no game. Just turn up all the beams when I come upon the scene.
Called Lone Digger. Before that, we had Wonderland, and we started off that set with Mighty. All of those songs from Caravan Palace. So some of you get 6 more minutes, but for the rest of you, we're out of here. The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt. Nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com. And we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And you may want to grab a pen or something, because I'm about to give you some information. If you like what you hear here on the Thunderbolt, then the Thunderbolt archives are stored at dana98501.wordpress.com. That's DANA98501, which is the downtown Olympia zip code, .wordpress.com. And if you would like to continue hearing the Thunderbolt, you can contribute to our cause at patreon.com/thethunderbolt. And
thank you very much.